Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Milford, Chair of the Club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we're inviting everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Mary Eileen Williams. Eileen Williams is a job search expert, author, blogger, speaker, and radio host. As a nationally board-certified career counselor with a master's degree in career development, she has over 20 years' experience as a career strategist, working with job seekers and career changers. Her book, Land the Job You Love, 10 Surefire Strategies for Job Seekers Over 50, provides mature applicants with the critical information they need to successfully navigate today's competitive job market. Eileen is an active contributor to the Huffington Post, writing job search articles for HuffPost 50. She also makes frequent appearances on both radio and TV and has been interviewed for MarketWatch, Money Magazine, Kiplinger, and several other national and international publications. Eileen is the host and founder of the popular Boomer blog and radio show called Feisty Side of 50. Please welcome Mary Eileen Williams.
Well, thank you so much, John. I am still a little floored by that descriptor, distinguished, but hopefully I appreciate being here, and I thank you again for that great introduction. The Commonwealth Club is one of my very favorite venues to speak at, and so it's a real pleasure for me to appear again this evening. And John and, Candice will both know that I am one of those perky, fast-talking type people. But I do have a lot of information I want to share with you this evening. So kind of be prepared for someone who will rattle it off fairly quickly. I do, however, also want to let you know, John had mentioned my book. Here is my sample copy. I did bring several with me this evening. Any of the information we discussed tonight is obviously in the book along with other information. It does sell for $12.95 on Amazon or bookstores, but I know money's tight when you're looking for work. So I sell it for $10. I pay the sales tax and my special super duper two for one, two for deal is if you want to go together, I sell them two for $15. So just want to let you know that, that's available to you. If you're interested in finding out more. But as I said, we have a lot of information to cover tonight. We're going to be talking about the seven keys to a successful job search, which I know there's a lot more than that, but there are at least seven, and so we want to get right to it. So tonight we're going to be talking again about these seven keys, and also I want to go into some detail on how to define, differentiate, and launch you the product. Now, looking around the room, I am assuming that every one of you sitting there loves selling yourself, right? Show of hands. Oh, we've got one. Oh, a couple. Okay. But the news is, and I'm sure that you've heard this before, especially talking about a job search, when you walk through that door, you are a person. Now, however, I am going to suggest you be a product because, again, it goes without saying that you do have to sell yourself out there. So we want to define you in terms of being a product. And here's where I want to start getting a little information from you before I go any further on this. If you were to pick a product off the shelf, you're in Nordstrom, you're looking for a piece of clothing, or there's something that you would want to buy, what would be some of the things that would attract you to one product over the other? Yes. Packaging. Okay. And why would packaging be important? And do you mind if I can turn some of these lights on so I can see my notes? Sorry, I'm old. I need my notes. What can I say? No, that's okay. Just the first one up here would be great. So tell me a little bit about why packaging might attract you.
It would be more appealing, more beautiful, more quality.
Okay, so a visual, and of course, that does make a lot of sense, especially if you're talking about, you know, say a piece of clothing. But even, you know, if you see a can of peas and it looks nice and it's brightly colored or something, that would appeal to you. So packaging is definitely something that if you're considering yourself a product, you want to talk about, and we're going to go into some detail about that. What else might attract you? Yes, in the back there. Hi. Pardon? Yes. Does this have the ingredients I'm looking for? Utility was what the woman said. And we definitely want to, again, as a product, present ourselves as having the right ingredients, having the right facets about ourselves, that it would be something that potential employers, in other words, your potential buyers, are going to want to find out. Yes. Ah, something unique. Okay. So you had mentioned clothing, vibrancy of color, etc., which kind of goes back to that visual appeal. So and if you want to be perceived as unique, then you might add a little something special when you're, you know, out networking or something like that. So anything else before we move on? Yes, way in the back there. Style. Okay, so the way you present yourself, and you do, as a job seeker, want to present yourself with a certain amount of style. I say there's two things that you want to make sure that you exude, and I'll go over this in a little more detail in a minute. But the first would be the professionalism. You have the right ingredients. You have the right stuff for that job. You are a professional in your field, whatever it is. And the second that you want to exude with your style is a sense of personal warmth. I am someone who would be a pleasure to work with. I am someone who will fit in with your group. And you do that in a variety of ways, but those two things are very important to, you know, to defining you, the product. So we want to create a powerful presence. We're going to talk a little bit about first impressions. And one of the things that I'd mentioned in an earlier speech here at the Commonwealth Club, but I'm old, I like to repeat myself, so I'm saying it again. We know the importance of first impressions. I mean, you can read that in many, many articles. And we also know that we come up with an initial first impression fairly quickly. Some articles I've read say 30 seconds, some say even 10 or 20 seconds. But one thing that I have come across that I thought was very interesting, and it's new to me, so I assume it might be new to you too, is communication specialists are now saying if you make a poor first impression, it can take up to 12 additional meetings to counteract that impression. So we do want to make sure that as much as possible, especially when you're looking for work, you are presenting yourself in a professional manner and showing that personal warmth, that sense of style, and all these other things that attract us about products. So we're going to talk a little bit about marketing and branding as well, because, again, these are all product terms, but they're very much in line with what you're going to be doing when you're out there looking for work. So let's talk about, I'm looking at something different on the screen here. So key number one, your ultimate success factor, and that, again, this is no surprise, that is your attitude. And attitude underscores every aspect of your job search. It underscores how you feel about yourself. It underscores how you present yourself to other people. I realize there are a lot of ups and downs in the job market, and I don't want to be a Pollyanna and all of that, but I do think as much as possible you want to do everything you can to preserve a positive attitude. Because it, as I said too, it really does underscore everything that you do. And in order to be successful in the job search, we want to start inside out. You want to start with the inside first. So some of the ways, and again, I, in the interest of time, I'll just rattle off a few of ways that people that I've worked with have done things to keep their attitudes positive. One of them, and I'm going to pick on the two ladies here sitting in the front row. Thank you for doing that. But you are in a networking group together, right? And I think networking with a job search group, whether it's formal, whether it's informal, whatever, there are a lot of groups. In the East Bay where I'm from, we have something called Experience Unlimited. I know they have something similar in the city, and many of you will probably know the name. But a job search group provides you with leads. It provides you with emotional support, people who understand what you're going through. You're not in the same boat, maybe, but you're in a similar boat. And it also can give you some skill sets. They have speakers. They have a lot of things going for you. And another thing, too, in your networking group, if I might ask you, do you have kind of a accountability factor, too? Well, in many networking groups, they'll say, like, okay, today's Wednesday. By next Wednesday, what do you promise to have done? You're not in your... Because many of them, you might want to check out, you're nodding. I assume that you have been in a job search group like that. I call it compassionate accountability, or also I like to call it the Weight Watchers of job search. You have to get on that scale every week and report in. So that is a great way to, again, get that mutual support to keep your spirits high. Another thing I think can be very helpful is to volunteer. Look for something in your line of work or in the way, the direction that you want to be going. Now, you don't want to take all your time volunteering because you need to reserve plenty of time to do the actual job search. But you're giving back to the community. It gives you a sense of fulfillment. And you don't know who you might be networking with, who you might meet, especially if it's in a field that's congruent with what you want to be doing. And lastly, I always suggest, we're going to talk a little bit about computer training or software training, or online courses is what I'm trying to say, that you can take, but I don't think they take the place of actually going to a physical class. Go to, say, a local adult ed or a community college or something and take something in line that is something that, again, would be your direction that you want to be going in. This is a triple whammy. First off, you get the skills, and you can put those skills on your resume. Secondly, because you're going for something that is something in a group that, you know, again, in the direction you're going in, you can network with your fellow classmates. And thirdly, and this might be, excuse me, most important of all, you can network with the instructor. And most people, I do workshops on job search, you know, most instructors talk about things that they have either had background in or, you know, they know a lot of people in. They might be able to give you solid leads as far as, you know, openings that are available, but also that networking, those names that can be very handy for you. So those are all great ways to keep yourself as positive as possible and keep that attitude going. And then just a moment, we've got a lot to cover, but I do want to just take a little moment to talk about fitness. In every job search book I've ever read, there is some component that they talk about. It's really helpful to do some form of exercise. I think, you know, it's a great stress reliever. It helps you with your appearance. It helps you, you know, feel good, you know, those endorphins and all of that. And if you especially are a woman, I'm going to show off my biceps now. Do some form of upper body strength or some form of weights, just because empowerment, there's that word power in there, and you feel good if you can feel some muscles. So I really think that fitness really is a critical component to keeping your attitude high, keeping the blood flowing, keeping your energy up. So that can be something that's really important. But mostly with attitude, I want to talk about two critical words, or more specifically, the way you follow up on two critical words. From now on, I want you to think, whenever you say the words, I am, how you follow them. When you say, I am X, you are telling other people who you are, what you bring to the table, you know, your history, or, you know, your personality, whatever it's about, and they're going to believe you. But more importantly than other people, you are telling yourself. And there's all sorts of articles on brain studies now and how, you know, the synapses form and the neurons connect with one another. And the more you tell yourself a story, the more you are likely to believe it. So just as an exercise right now, I'm going to say, I am too old to get the job I want. I am too shy or inarticulate to be able to network effectively. I am not one of those people that can learn quickly. I am someone who will fail probably at what I... Can you just feel your shoulders dropping and your energy dropping? I can. And again, they if you follow up I am with something negative, you are doing yourself such a great disservice. You want to follow up, and if it's affirmations, if it's whatever it is, but I am a strong candidate. I am a candidate of value. I am someone who can hit the ground running. I am someone who takes direction well. I am someone who can connect with people easily. Again, the more you can do that, it goes back to attitude. And I know, you know, it sounds a little new agey and all that stuff, but I do think affirmations or whatever it is are especially helpful while you're out there, because how you answer I am is really the whole kit and caboodle, so to speak, the whole structure of not only the way you interact in a job search, but it also falls into a lot of areas in life. So just watch how you finish that. Okay, we had talked about, and I think this is really, really important, about you, the product, and visual appeal. So you want to make sure that you are, you know, that you are exuding attractive product packaging. And the first thing, and you're going to like this because this is just what you said, about appearance and clothing. And I do think as people of a certain age, we want to make sure that we are aware of, you know, styles. I don't think we want to be overly trendy for sure, but you want to make sure that you are dressing yourself whenever you go out. And I'm talking specifically and most importantly about any kind of a networking event, or say you're taking a class with other people who would be acting as part of your network, or any of these kinds of situations. And of course, most importantly, at a job interview, that you dress the role for what you're going for and take it up a notch, specifically in that job interview. But you want to make sure that, again, you are exuding the professionalism and personal warmth. So you want to make certain that, you know, your clothing reflects this, because what clothing is clothing is a nonverbal message that I fit. So you want to show through how you choose to dress, I fit within this certain occupation, I fit within this certain group of people, I fit within this certain profession. So clothing is important. You want to make sure you are fairly updated. I won't tell you how old this jacket is, but I hope none of you are fashionistas that know it might be a few years old. But anyway, I do think, you know, you do want to keep fairly current on that. Also, if you need to change a hairstyle or your eyewear, all of these things reflect age, and you do want to show that you care to keep up. So you want to make sure that, again, all of these, your clothing and appearance. And if you want to show something a little bit unique, wear maybe a nice scarf or something, or a piece of, you know, jewelry that's a little bit different and unique. Another thing is when you're networking, that can be very helpful, because if you are at a networking event, they'll say, oh, be sure and talk to the woman in the maroon jacket, and she's got the yellow pin on, and, you know, whatever. So that way they can refer people to you too. So sometimes it's helpful to add something, a little touch of being unique. The other thing, and I know that you're familiar with these, but, you know, the nonverbal cues that you give off are, of course, critical to your general appearance and approachability. We've all heard about a firm handshake, but does anybody have an idea about what is the most important nonverbal message you can send? They interviewed interviewers, and they said this by far was number one. Yes. Bingo, you got it right off. I was hoping I'd get a few misses here, but no, eye contact. And we really have to be careful that we have the right amount of eye contact, because eye contact shows a lot of things in our culture. You know, we think if you're shifty-eyed, or if you lower your eye contact or your gaze, you're not confident enough. All sorts of things are perceived by the amount of eye contact you show. So you do want to make sure that your eye contact is, you know, you can practice it with people when you go into a store or whatever, if you have difficulties with that, that you are making that eye contact and you're making the appropriate amount of eye contact. But of course, also is the way you're, you know, the way you hold yourself, your posture. You probably know this as well, but when you are in any kind of an interview situation or interacting, you want to open up your body language, because, again, closed-off body language can reflect, you know, I'm not interested. It also can reflect like, oh, gee, I'm not that secure and all these things. So you want to make sure that your body language is open. Now, this is another thing I've talked about earlier here at the Commonwealth Club, and you may have heard of it by now, but I am very excited about this. Has anybody heard of power posing or Amy Cuddy? Okay, I've got several nods. Anybody not heard? Okay, there's a few of you who have not heard. Then bear with me for those of you who know about it. But Amy Cuddy is a Harvard researcher. And what she discovered is, we've known this for a while, that the more space you take up body language-wise, the more confident you show other people that you are. So people who tend to be confident tend to take up a lot of space. But what she found out is not only do you show other people your confidence, but it goes into your own internal chemical system. The way you, if you pose, if you take a powerful stance. So what Amy Cuddy did is they had volunteers do what they call power posing, which is taking up a lot of space. And you can see I am doing the Wonder Woman pose here. Now, I wouldn't suggest you walk through the door at an interview like this, doing the Wonder Woman walk or whatever. But what you can do is a couple of minutes before you go in, you know, in the restroom or something like that, you know, try to open up your body language for a couple of minutes. And by doing that, what happens, as I mentioned, it's a real chemical reaction. In both men and women, your testosterone levels raise by 25%. And that, the testosterone, of course, is the assertion chemical. So that gives you a greater sense of confidence, a greater sense of assertion. And your cortisol level, or the stress hormone, decreases by 25%. So what happened is, again, they had volunteers who were preparing to go into a job interview. And what they found out is the people who had taken time to power pose before that job interview were considered more authentic, more confident, better at their job, and they got hired more frequently. So it's really something. She did a TED Talk, so I would suggest if you're unfamiliar with her or if you want to brush up on it, go to Google and just put in either Amy Cuddy or Power Pose, and that'll bring you to that TED Talk, which is well worth the 15 or 20 minutes in that. The other thing with attractive packaging I want to stress is, of course, not only do you need to look good in person, but any of your written materials have to be visually approachable and visually inviting. So this goes to, you know, this is not anything earth-shaking, but just make sure on your LinkedIn profile, on your resume, if you do a business card, that the key skills that you want to highlight especially have a lot of white space around them. They are bulleted. You don't overuse bolding, because sometimes people will bold a lot of different things, and that can be off-putting. But you want to bold certain things, like maybe title headings. But you want to make sure that the font is a good size, that there's white space, that there's bullets, and that people can extract that information quickly. They do think resume reviewers spend about 30 seconds or less deciding whether or not they're going to read that resume. So a way that you can tell if your resume is visually appealing and you're getting that information across quickly is hand your resume to some friends. In your head, count to 30 and take it back again and say, what do you remember from my resume? And it's a great real-world tool to determine whether or not that information that you want to, again, give off very quickly is actually doing that. Whoops. Okay, so package with a punch, this polished first impression. And again, we did want to talk about first impressions. So you want to exude three things in a first impression: confidence, enthusiasm, and energy or vitality. First impressions, whoever studied this, I don't know how they figured this one out, but let's just suppose that they are right. 55% of a first impression is comprised of nonverbal communication. So it's probably at the unconscious level, but we are going to immediately determine a first impression by the visual cues you're giving off. 38% is that sense of confidence that you're giving off, or enthusiasm, and 7% is the actual words you're saying. So again, this has been out there for like 20 years. You can look it up. It's rather surprising, I think. But confidence, I think, especially as a mature job seeker, do not apologize for our age. We want to come from a position of strength, even though sometimes it might be difficult. Mature job seekers have all sorts of skills that they have gotten by their experience alone. They have market knowledge. They've developed skills over a lifetime. They have a network of customers, of clients that, you know, they've developed over a lifetime. They have a mature work ethic. And John mentioned at one of my earlier talks, our generation has far better communication skills. Remember, John, you'd mentioned that, I think, than younger generations. And I don't mean to put down younger generations, but we know how to interact with one another and not just sit there on the phone. Like John would say, you know, the grown-ups, we tend to be better face-to-face, et cetera. So we want to make sure that we realize these strengths, our added value, and that we, you know, again, we don't want to apologize for our age, but come from that, you know, idea of, you know, my experience gives me X amount of extra value to you, and I can hit the ground running with very little, perhaps no supervision. I know this job inside and out. Another thing, confidence builder, though, and I do go over these frequently because I think they're important. The only thing is, older job seekers, one of the biggest stereotypes or things that younger employers may hold against us is they feel that we lack the technical chops for the job. So if you are at all lacking in certain technical areas, the good news is there are several free and low-fee websites available to you now. So everybody should be able to, unless you're in a highly technical world or a technical environment, you ought to be able to bring up your basic technical skills without a lot of added expense. So just so you know, I'm going to go over these quickly. One of them is lynda.com, and you may have heard of that, but it's definitely worth checking out, and it's lynda.com. 4,000 video tutorials on that. $25 a month, you have unlimited access to these tutorials, so check it out, because for those of you who, you know, again, you're probably going to find something that will be of value to you. The second one I like to tell people about is called GCF. That's G like George, C like Cat, F like Frank, learnfree.org. GCFlearnfree.org is just like it sounds. It is free. They have the Microsoft Office Suite. They have some math tutorials. They're especially good for people when English is a second language. They have information on that. They have a lot of good information. Again, it's totally free. It's worth checking out. Now, if you want to go into Microsoft, some of the Microsoft products at a little bit more depth or at a higher level, just Google Microsoft Office Training. They have a big, long URL. I'm not going to even begin to try to tell you. But just Google Microsoft Office Training. That will bring you to their website, and you'll find a variety of free classes that they have created for you, or free tutorials that you can use and take and bring your skills up to speed. And finally, one I will end on here is openculture.com. Openculture.com. They boast the largest accumulation of links to free websites that are either culturally focused or educationally focused. So say you want to brush up on your Spanish, or you want to do any of these kinds of things that you think will support you, making you a more attractive candidate, check that out. And they also, I was looking at them today, they have links to, I want to get this right, 800 MOOCs. Does everybody know what MOOC is? Okay, MOOC stands for, this is a new thing that, well, it started a few years ago. It's called Massive Open Online Courses. And a number of universities are giving actually free courses away. So you don't have to do a lot of papers or anything like that either. So it's a great way you just get that information. So that's on openculture.com. So check that out. So we've talked about building your confidence. You want to build that by knowing that you come from a position of strength and you have the skills to do the job. So make sure that you are technically proficient enough to do your job. Then the enthusiasm for the position, for the company, for what you bring. There's a couple of ways I want to talk about showing enthusiasm other than your nonverbal messages, etc. And one of these, well, basically both of these are in a job interview. They're generally going to start out with, tell me about yourself, that question. And, you know, you give their, you know, your elevator pitch or whatever, and we don't have time to talk about that tonight, but all that information's in my book if you're interested. And so you would finish, but you can finish off with, you know, you give your skills and experience in a way that are in line with what they're looking for, of course, and then you can finish it with something like, and that's why I'm especially excited to find out more about this opportunity. So right there, you are showing your enthusiasm to find out more about the company, to find out more about that position, and to make that connection with someone. So you can start the interview that way, and then you can finish an interview on a, also on a high note by saying, they'll say something like, well, thank you for your time, you know, we'll let you know, whatever. And you can say, now that we've had this conversation, I'm even more interested in the position. Can you tell me, you know, what the next steps are, where you are in the hiring process or whatever? But if you kind of bookend the interview by showing enthusiasm at the beginning and by making sure you show it at the end, and hopefully all the way along, but that way you can, you know, you can leave a great first impression and a great last impression as far as the enthusiasm. Because as I'd mentioned earlier, They want people that want that have the skills to do the job, but even more than that, or at least as much as that, they want someone who wants to be there. They want someone who's pleasant to work with. They want someone who has that buy-in, that emotional buy-in to that. Okay, so now we're going to move on to, again, having the right ingredients as a product. So you need to focus on your customers' needs. One of the best ways to do that is to target your product description to what they are wanting out there today. Best way to do that is use the job postings as your major research tool. It's not that complicated of a process. What you want to do is focus in, pull up 5 to 10 job postings that are very similar to what you want to be doing. And pretend you're in kindergarten. I always say this, take a yellow marker or a red pen, underline the skills you see in these postings, and you will most often see the same skills come up over and over again. That gives you an idea what the market is buying you the product today. So if they're wanting that, you want to make sure that you let them know you've got it, certainly if you do. But the other thing is not only the frequency of the skills, and again, the ones that come up repeatedly, but also the order in which they are placed in the various ads. Most likely, employers are going to list what they want in order of impact. So you want to do the same thing on any of your written materials and when you're focusing on how you might respond to interview questions. Give them the skills that they deem most essential first, because that's what they're going to want to know from you. So use these postings as a primary research tool, because they'll give you what's in demand out there today and also the order in which or the way that in which they are valued by employers. Another thing that can be very helpful is make sure that you, if the industry words have changed, and a lot of times they do, you want to be speaking in current speak, so to speak. So use buzzwords, things like that are currently in demand. You will find these in the ad. Excuse me, if you're leaving, you left your jacket? Oh, you are. Okay. I just didn't want to let you know you had your jacket here. Okay, so you want to make sure that, again, not only are you presenting the current skills, but as you are speaking in an interview and even maybe in a cover letter or something like that, you are giving current terminology that shows you are a knowledgeable insider. In addition to showing your professionalism and your personal warmth, in every way that you can, you present yourself as a knowledgeable insider, because that's who they're looking to find. You want to make sure also that you represent all three types of your skills. There are three skill categories you want to represent. The first are your knowledge-based skills. Knowledge-based skills relate directly to what you do. So if you were, say, a software programmer or a computer programmer, you would refer to your programming skills or any special education you had. Secondly, you read about resumes, transferable skills. Those are the broader-based skills that will transfer from one arena to another. So those would be skills like prioritizing, organizing, those kinds of skills. Now, knowledge-based skills and transferable skills, I'm going to take a little break here, but those are the ones that you want to make sure you load on your written materials. Those go on your resume, on your LinkedIn profile. And the reason is because these are evidence-based skills. You want to talk about situations you dealt with. I'm sure you know PAR or whatever, problems you handled, the skills that you used, and the positive result you achieved. And if you can quantify that, put numbers on that positive result, you always want to do that. That goes on written materials. Do not load your resume up with a lot of personal strengths, which is the third skill category, because personal strengths tend to be more claims, and they're vague. I've seen so many resumes that are loaded with, you know, self-motivated self-starter, or motivated self-starter, contributing team player, whatever. What does that mean? That's not an evidence-based skill where I see a problem that you had, the skills that you used, and the positive result that you achieved. However, your personal strengths are what are going to land you the job in the interview. You'll walk through the door by your knowledge-based skills and your transferable skills. The written material is going to get you through the door, but the interview, they're going to hire you, the person. So as you are preparing for an interview, you want to show how your personal strengths distinguish you. Are you someone who can think outside the box? Are you especially creative? Do you build rapport easily? And then give examples when you are meeting face-to-face of those kind of skills. And this... you can't see it down there at the bottom, but there's something called first-level screening. It's down at the bottom. Oh, there, I guess you can. The first-level screening. What I'm referring to there is, I'm sure many of you have heard of ATS, which are applicant tracking systems. Most organizations of any size have these now, and it's a scanning software that will only present resumes that have the skills that they want so that a human being can actually see it. Otherwise, it just gets buried in the black hole of cyberspace. So as I was talking about giving them skills that they're looking for, if you submit a resume or any kind of something to a particular organization, you want to even customize it down further, and I'm sure that many of you are aware of that. But that's to be able to pass through that first-level screening. Okay, let's move right along here to key skill number 4. One of the things that as a product you have to show, your visual appeal, you have the right ingredients, but also you have to distinguish yourself and how you are going to outperform the competition. So you want to define your added value and think in terms of what makes me better? What makes me more qualified? Again, are you known particularly for being an out-of-the-box thinker? Are you someone who has the skills to turn around a disgruntled client or a customer? Are you especially good with details and routine? Can you be counted on to follow through? All of these kinds of things are going to help distinguish you from the competition. So you want to make sure that you express those. Again, a lot of these, the personal strengths, you want to do that verbally, but you can also express those through examples that you choose to put on your resume as well, too. So just think in terms of, how your experience might make you different. I'll just very quickly say I might highlight the environments I've worked in because I had a private practice. I worked as an instructor at a local college. I did outplacement or whatever. So the various environments might give me a leg up on somebody else, So whatever it is, certain experiences, the skill sets you have, maybe environments where you've worked in. And then also you want to highlight your cross-functional skills. Cross-functional skills are skills that don't necessarily tend to go together. So again, this is a broad brush. This is a stereotype. I don't want to offend anybody in here. But a lot of times, highly engineered type IT professionals might not have the people skills that a counselor or a teacher might have. So these might be considered cross-functional skills. Again, they tend to think in more abstract, more technical terms, whatever. So they might, if they've got these, they want to show that they have what they're looking for, what the employers are looking for. They have these strongly developed IT skills, but they have the added value of bringing people skills as well. So what you would do on your resume or on a LinkedIn profile is use the terms that I have up here, unique combination of X and Y. I have what you're going for, but I bring this extra added value that makes me better than the competition. You can also use the term winning combination of X and Y. So any of those things. And lastly, on this point, I suggest anybody in their midlife or beyond, you want to add a special section to your resume so that this will distinguish you also from the competition. Underneath your education, that section, I suggest putting a different or a special section called, and I term it this way, ongoing professional development. Ongoing professional development. Then you can list some of these courses you took online or some classes you did. You don't need to list a lot, but 3 or 4. What that shows is I might be a person of a certain age, but I care about lifelong learning. I care to keep my skills current. I care to keep up. So all of those are going to help distinguish you from others who might be going for that job. Key number 5, again, this is no surprise, but people get people jobs. So just like if you were going to buy a car, you would ask your friends, I'm thinking about Lexus or whatever. What do you think about that? Or you'll ask somebody, I'm looking at, an apartment or something. Do you know where to go? Any of the things that you want to purchase or whatever, you will oftentimes go to friends or colleagues, people you trust to give you a good opinion. That's exactly what employers do. Exactly what employers do. They want to know, they want a good, strong candidate. So if they can, they will hire someone they know. If they don't necessarily are able to do that, they will actually turn to people, so they hire someone who has been recommended by someone else. And if you are a candidate with equal skill sets, equal experience to someone else, I would say invariably the one who comes with a personal referral is going to get the job over the one who doesn't, even though they might be equal in every other regard. So they feel that about 3/4 of jobs are gotten by way of personal referral, which shows you that's how you want to spend your time, about 3/4 of your time interacting with other people. And the other thing about that is people want to trust other people. You know, again, the personal referral from a valued employee, from a trusted peer, from a friend, that's going to come to let them know this person, it probably is, you know, has integrity, they have responsibility, they have these things that they're not necessarily going to find out on a resume or even in an interview. So you come with what is called the halo effect. You can't beat the halo effect, and that's the other thing that a networking referral can do for you. And finally, two, your competition levels are going to drop. And I'm going to point to you back here. You said that you were an administrative assistant. That's what you're going. Well, if you just submit online, you know, to online postings, I would assume your competition levels in San Francisco would be in the thousands, you know. But if a friend refers you, your competition levels might drop to 10, 8, 20, something like that. At minimum, you will generally at least get a phone screen interview. So again, that's another, your competition levels will drop dramatically if you are referred. And finally, you will break through to what is called the hidden job market. The hidden job market, especially in smaller organizations, they decide, well, I need an HR person. So they're not necessarily going to advertise online because they don't want to wade through all these resumes or whatever. They will ask their employees, their colleagues in the field, you know, friends or whatever, and that's the way that someone is going to get hired, you know, when it's not even advertised. That's the hidden job market. I don't know if this is true, but some career professionals say as many as 80% of jobs are in that hidden job market. So just so you're aware of that. Okay, now we'll move on to key number 6, close the sale with appealing pricing. And we talked about this a little bit before we started this evening, and that is salary. And this is a tricky, tricky thing, especially for mature job seekers. But I think what you want to do is break it down into 3 pieces: value, desire, and adaptability. First, the value. You have to know what you are worth out there in the job market today. And you can do it online. You can Google, you know, salary surveys, or there is salary.com. Glassdoor.com is a great resource for finding out salary information. And a lot of these, you put your zip code in it, so it's very specific to the area, because we know San Francisco is going to be different than it is in Ohio or someplace like that. So make sure that you have an awareness of it. You can also ask networking partners that, you know, are in the line of work you're going for. Now, you don't want to say, gee, how much money do you make? That's not necessarily going to build or maintain that rapport. But what you can do is say, what do you think someone with my skills and background might bring for a position in this company or something? So that's a way you can do that more personal level of determining your value out there. The other thing is desire. Of course, how much do you want to make? And we do have to be a little flexible here, because one of the biggest stereotypes younger employers hold against us is that we are too expensive. But if you can really get very clear on your essential and your non-essential expenses, that can help you determine, you know, what salary level you are going to be comfortable with. And we all want to be able to take vacations. We all want to get some nice clothes. We all want to do things like that. So don't shortchange yourself. But you may not want to be demanding top dollar if you need a job, and especially if you need an income-producing job. And then adaptability. Like I said, we need to be a little flexible in this regard, because there is that major stereotype against us. But before you do a lot of interviewing and, you know, really getting very clear on which job you want, I would list 5 priorities that are really important to you around, you know, again, the job description itself, salary, things like that. put that in a drawer, and every time you go out, make sure you pull that out, because that is a benchmark you can refer back to. If you, you know, if it's meeting your values in several other ways, you might take a drop in salary. Or it may not meet a lot of your values, so you want a little extra money because, you know, that's what that is going to keep you there. Whatever it is, you want to get clear on all these things before you go out because you want to make it a win-win outcome. You are negotiating with your future employer and sometimes the hiring manager who would be your future boss. So you do want to make sure that it's coming out, you know, fair for everyone and it's going to end up on a high note. Okay, finally, key number 7, and this is, thank you, John, the power of persistence. One of the things that you want to do is schedule your time and use it wisely. You probably have heard this before, but really it's helpful to consider your job search process a full-time job. So I'm talking around 40 hours a week. Also, you want to make sure that around 30 of those hours are spent interacting with people because you're most likely to get that job by far through informal referral. And that another way you can do that is say that you want to at least contact maybe 5 people a day. However, it is easier for you to figure out, but you do want to spend the primary amount of time interacting with other people. You want to make sure that you are organized. Many times they're going to say, oh, can you call, you know, so-and-so's out this week. Can you give them back a call on Tuesday or whatever? You can do spreadsheets. You can do, I make lists and check them off because it's a visual kind of way of showing that I'm making progress. But there another website I want to tell you about is called JibberJobber.com. JibberJobber.com. There's a fee-based version and a free version, but it's a wonderful resource to help you organize your job search on all sorts of levels. So I really like people to know about that. Another thing I suggest doing is a proactive job search. The way you do a proactive job search is come up with, say, to start off with maybe 5-10 companies where you want to work. That's the way, the title of my book is Land the Job You Love. You're going to land a job you love if you do a proactive job search. Then you write emails to people in your network and say, I am targeting these 5 companies right now. Do you know anyone who might work there and who might be willing to give me 15 minutes of their time? 15 minutes is about right because people are, you know, if you just say, talk to me, they're so, I'm too busy, I just can't do that. But it won't take longer than 15 minutes. They'll be happy to do it. And make sure that you follow up because part of who you are as a candidate is going to be reflected in the way you honor your commitments. Okay, John, we are almost done. Last slide. 2 more slides, actually. 7 keys brought down to 5 easy pieces. Okay, we've got 2 attitudes in these keys to success. The first attitude are 2 P words. You want to stay positive and you want to stay persistent. Again, you've got to keep motivating yourself to be going forward. Now, there's a 3rd P word you want to watch out for. You don't want to be considered a pest. So persistence has its limits, but you do, as much as possible, stay positive and persistent. Then you want to make sure that you've got a great product description for you, the product. This would include attractive packaging in person and on paper, distinguishing yourself from the competition, presenting a message of added value, who you as a unique person, a person of value, would bring to that opportunity or bring to that position. And a way to go back, you know, to kind of set the stage in your own mind is to think to yourself, what makes me the best person for this job? So the more you can think that, then it'll start to open up the thought processes and hopefully you'll come up with some great points there. Customer-driven marketing. You have to make sure that you are presenting yourself as a product who is in demand in today. Go to those job postings, you know, talk to people, do your interaction, you know, your networking meetings, things like that. Make sure you are presenting yourself to the needs of the marketplace today. Maintain your word of mouth, which is the way you're going to land that job, by at least spending at least 3/4 of your time interacting with other people. And finally, negotiate with finesse and make sure it's a win-win process and you are achieving those top 5 or 6 things that you value most. That is important for you to feel good about your time. The older we get, the more important is that we get these internal values met. And I will close now with a couple of quotes. Many of you are familiar with Anthony Robbins. He's the guy that runs on stage screaming and yelling and all that. But he says, in essence, it's not, you know, if we want to direct our lives, we have to take control of consistent actions. It's not what we do once in a while that's going to shape our future and our lives, but what we do consistently. John Maxwell said, the only real guarantee of failure is to stop trying. And one of my favorites, Robert Strauss, I'm going to get my glasses on so I can read this, is success is a little bit like wrestling a gorilla. You don't quit when you're tired. You quit when the gorilla is tired. I think that's one we want to remember in a job search. And I will leave you with one more. The only difference between the word try and the word triumph is just a little oomph. So go out there, and if you are interested, I would love to show you my book if that might help. And thank you so much for your time. Thank you, John. Oh, and do we have time for questions?
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yes. Thank you very much. We'd like to remind our listening audience, this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California. You're listening to Mary Eileen Williams with 7 Keys to Your Success as a Mature Job Seeker. Now, I know there are questions. So if anyone has a question, we have a microphone for your question to be heard. Put your hand up, and Mary Eileen, will you answer?
I think I just might.
Okay. Does anybody have a question?
Hi. You said that 75% of your time should be connecting with others and contacting them. Are you referring by phone or face-to-face? What about LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook, using those as...
I'm glad you asked that question, because all of them, you just want to make sure that you're using every avenue you have to interact with other people, get your name out there. But the one thing I caution people to do, especially if you tend to be a little bit on the introverted side, and that is, do not sit in front of your computer all day long. Get out, join these clubs, go to a class, go somewhere where you're actually going to be meeting people face to face, because you can build that rapport much more strongly if you look at someone, and they're going to be far more likely to want to help you if they have that personal relationship with you. But any of those are great, so thank you. Yes.
Hi, this is Rahul.
Hi, Rahul.
So my question is regarding cover letters. So in the past year, dealing with different employers and also dealing with executive recruiters, they don't seem to insist on cover letters. So how relevant is it in the job search right now, and do we still need it?
I am glad you asked that too. Am I on, as you so beautifully put? That is something that I get a lot of questions about. You know, sometimes people will pay far more attention to the cover letter. That's the way it certainly used to be. But in today's job market, I'm not sure. I think your resume is at least as important and probably far more important. If they are going to, you know, send something around, say like the office, other coworkers or whatever, it's far more likely going to be your resume rather than a cover letter. But you don't know what someone who is going to reviewing this might value the most. So unfortunately, you really have to put in you have to put effort into both a cover letter, a targeted cover letter, and target your resume. I have cover letter examples in the book, and what you want to do is bullet out the middle paragraph, which talks about your skills. So you can do that on a cover letter. Both of those, you know, again, will draw the reviewer's eye immediately to what you have to offer. But unfortunately, there's no easy way to get one way or the other. I myself believe the resumes are more important, but you can't totally discount cover letters at this stage either.
Yes, that is a perfect lead up to my question, which is an effective resume. What does it look like? Because we're in a more visual age today than we have been. And in my own opinion, I think resumes are really boring looking. And so I'm trying to design a different format, but I don't want something to come off as gimmicky, but I want to know what's effective. And I've looked online for different, formats and have started trying them, but you can't do them so easily in Word. And is there software that's good for a more visual-oriented resume? And actually, are employers looking at those, or are they seeing that as something that, you know, is that's great, but would it, you know, are they serious about those? So I would like to know what you think about that.
Well, I will say, as a disclaimer immediately, if you ask even job search professionals about resumes, you're going to get a whole variety of opinions. My opinion is, again, you need to customize that resume to the needs of the employer that you're going for, and you need to make those skills immediately visible at the top. Do not hide your skill sets or in dense blocks of text. And by dense blocks of text, I mean a couple of sentences. You can start off with a professional profile, over 15 years experience in blah, 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 or if you don't want to put that, varied experience in such and such. And then highlights of qualifications include or skills. And then you want, my suggestion would be a skills column that is easy to customize to the particular position. So I would do that. If you want to do something with a little bit of extra flair or something that you'd mentioned a little bit more unique, if you are going for a profession that values creativity, values uniqueness, that's great. If you are not, I hate to tell you, but I'd be a little on the boring side, because you want, you know, you can show your uniqueness maybe in a different way. But if you try to get too unique with a resume, years ago, again, I've been doing this for a long time, the color printers just came out, and people would put professional experience in fuchsia, and then this and that, you know, all these colors. It just would look strange at this point. So, again, I don't want to discourage you in any way, but you kind of keep it pretty traditional. Last thing I want to say is when you submit it, if you can attach it, you want to attach it as a PDF so it doesn't get all mixed up. It'll still look visually the way you want it to.
What do you think about putting links in your resume or cover letter?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
What do you think about putting links in your resume or cover letter?
I would definitely put links to, say, like your LinkedIn profile. That's a great way. If you have something else that will, again, distinguish you in a way that, you know, would be to your advantage, if you've got, say, like a lot of online, you know, I don't know, you're a blogger, or like I might put a link to my Huffington Post pieces, because I would think that would make, you know, me look professional.
And I've got one other question.
Yes.
I'm working on an application right now. The posting has almost a full page list of skills that they're looking for. So if I parrot back every one of those, there's a good tip to say that their most important ones might be the first ones, but I'm kind of tempted to try to condense a couple, but I don't know if that's a great idea.
You're tempted to, I'm sorry, to
combine a few.
I think they want what they want, that's for sure. But if they've got a whole page full of listing, yeah, you don't want to necessarily parrot them all back. But you can certainly, I would think by taking a look at the position description, talking to people and getting an idea, you can identify the top five or six things that they're really looking to find, and then discuss more of those, you know, in an interview or, you know, however that unfolds.
Arlene, I think we have time for one more question.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I'm going to throw in two here.
We got to watch out for this one. Yeah.
Your talk seems to be focused on introverts. Can you speak a little bit about people who are more of an extrovert or too aggressive or too strong? And the second point is career switch. You mentioned that you might be talking about that. And what about people who are still trying to figure out what they want to do when they grow up?
Okay, well, boy, those are really simple questions. Thank you. Okay, if you tend to be very, very assertive or strong, this is great if you are going for a job that would value that, you know, that personality style. You just want to present yourself as someone who is going to fit with someone else. So there's all sorts of techniques, mirroring techniques you may have heard, that, you know, if the interviewer leans back, you're supposed to lean back. I think it's a little strange to do all that. But as much as you can match the pace, say, match the feelings that you get, but don't turn yourself into a pretzel either, because you're not going to last there if you're unhappy. So if you tend to have a strong personality, you would want to be around people who would either value that personality or who have a similar personality type as well. As far as what do I want to do when I grow up, I will give a little blurb again from my book. I have a lot of exercises in there about, you know, some evaluations. You want to think in terms of, again, evaluate your values, I always say. Values and evaluate are related. And what that means is, if you don't know what's important to you, how can you evaluate or make appropriate choices? Values, skills that give you energy, experience things, all these kinds of things are part of the component of doing that. So you can take a step back, and I would suggest taking a step back before doing a full-on job search if you're not clear. Thank you very much.
Our thanks to Mary Eileen Williams. Mary, will you stay and take individual questions afterwards? And also, I would mention books are in the back, and they were mentioned earlier, and you'll sign? Okay. So let's thank Mary Eileen Williams. Thank you. We thank you as well as our listening audience. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 112th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.